Welcome to the ISF podcast from the Information Security Forum, featuring timely conversations, practical insights, and resources for global cybersecurity professionals. I'm your host, Tavia Gilbert. Listeners, this week we were going to run an episode with Steve in conversation with small business security expert Mark Gibson. But with the developing global situation, we felt it was important to address what's happening with the current expansion of 5G and what that could mean in terms of both local and global security. We also want to call your attention to the episodes that we recently released on the New World Order and the race for tech dominance, as we see the themes and threats discussed playing out now on the global stage. We'll link back to those in the show notes in case you missed them or would like to re-listen. Today, ISF CEO Steve Durbin and I talk about the implications of the 5G revolution on the transportation industry, and we'll discuss what role security plays. Steve, the rollout of 5G has been making recent news, including disputes between wireless companies and between the FAA and U.S. airlines around when 5G can be implemented. Of course, disputes around 5G security aren't limited to any particular country or just to the air travel industry. So let's start there. Can you give us some background on 5G? What's being done to implement it so far?
Sure, Tavia. At its core, 5G network technology is all about blazing fast speeds. It's about massive data volumes, interconnectivity at a scale that people haven't seen before. And rolling out 5G means a pretty significant investment in what is structurally very, very different network hardware that can support the velocity and the volume that 5G promises. Then, in addition to the sort of expenditure that I've just been talking about, you've got the way in which it operates. So virtualization of traditionally hardware-embedded network functions. And that opens up, from a crime perspective, cybercrime perspective, new exploitation opportunities, of course, for malicious actors. Now, with 5G, the stakes are probably higher than ever because 5G will soon become the backbone of critical national infrastructure. An Ericsson Consumer Lab study of the information and communication technology industry uncovered $31 trillion addressable consumer revenues that will flow over 5G networks by 2030. So a very, very large prize. Service providers alone could secure almost $4 trillion of that. Mm-hmm. And that's driven by 5G connectivity, which remains the biggest revenue driver. So it's a very big change. It's very big business.
Yeah, a lot of time and money have already gone into introducing 5G technology. So where is it? What's the problem? Why don't I have it? What's the holdup?
Well, in limited ways, of course, it's already here. 5G has already enabled latency-sensitive mission-critical industrial control systems that run things like smart grids, smart cities, smart factories. Autonomous systems such as self-driving cars and automatic pilot avionics also rely on the speed, capacity, and reliability of 5G networks. So it is operating at a certain level. But from the consumer standpoint, of course, it still hasn't rolled out effectively, consistently. I think that's the key thing. It's not consistent. But of course, the flip side of all of that is that any disruption to the sorts of services that I've just been talking about and those applications that they're running can quickly become very, very serious, if not fatal. Yet, you know, as we've said so many times before, security far too often takes a back seat when speed and volume are the driving forces. And that's the real challenge, I think, from the security standpoint anyway, of the way in which perhaps 5G is being rolled out. We're increasing dependency, we're increasing speed, we're increasing volume. And those are all the sorts of things that if you haven't built security in from the beginning are pretty difficult to deal with.
So we're in the same place that we've been for so many years in conversation, that we are rolling out an exciting, highly profitable technology with very little thought to security. Is that accurate?
Well, I'm sure there'll be people listening to this who will disagree with me, of course. But, you know, that would be... yeah, my assessment, we're back to that old chestnut again, security being, you know, left out in the cold.
Let's talk about the transportation industry in particular. Why is that sector so affected by security issues with 5G?
Well, over the last probably 3 years, the transportation industry has experienced dramatic technological upheaval with cars, trains, planes, ships, drones, all becoming more sophisticated and more interconnected. The media and consumers alike are demanding constant connectivity to the internet. We can't be without it. Mm-hmm. An element of autonomy and cleaner renewable energy sources to power them are also required. Now, investment across these industries has been significant, introducing incredible new designs and possibilities to life as we know it, from things like swarms of intelligent delivery drones to self-driving trucks, self-navigating ships. So the world is changing very, very rapidly on the back of this. However, as industries rush to develop ever more digitized modes of transport, they're inadvertently increasing the number of opportunities attackers have to disrupt operations and put users at risk. Cyber and physical domains have merged, giving rise to a hybrid threat landscape. And, you know, we talk about that a lot in the ISF Threat Horizon programs, this sort of hybrid landscape that is evolving. And that's capable of being disrupted and damaged pretty significantly. So, you know, if we look at one sector, perhaps to flesh it out a little bit, the leisure vehicle industry is set to experience significant growth over the coming years, with the number of connected cars manufactured globally topping 70 million in 2020. Connected vehicles can be described as a vehicle with integrated systems such as internet access and a local area network which controls basic systems. So, for example, newer models can have their entertainment, communications, locking, and safety functions controlled remotely from applications. Some of our listeners may be thinking immediately of some of their own cars in that instance. Ultimately, the risk transfers from the end user's driving ability to a plethora of applications running on proprietary software. And I think, unfortunately, attackers will soon turn their attention to the vast number of vulnerabilities across software controlling these vehicles because it's an opportunity. Mm-hmm. Ransomware, for instance, will proliferate over the coming years with attackers locking individuals into or out of cars or perhaps taking control of vehicles in transit or causing other types of disruption. Now, that means, of course, that lives could frequently be put at risk, causing nightmares for insurance companies as they face complex class action legal battles should incidents begin to fall into recognizable patterns. And the bad news is that threats won't just be isolated to cars. Semi-autonomous and autonomous trucks have been deployed in the United States, as you know already, with Asia and the Middle East following suit. Cargo-carrying trains are becoming significantly more autonomous too. Entire supply chains could be disrupted should the trucking and train industries become overdependent on technology to operate. Nation-state attackers, for instance, could begin targeting trucks on the road or trains on the rails, with the effects being felt across pretty much every single industry that is served. Drones, you know, drones have also seen significant technological development over the last few years, and acceptance of their usage is improving. Commercial drones have become more autonomous with increased range, equipped with cameras for prolonged surveillance. Now, this opens up a number of opportunities, of course, for delivery, maintenance. Agriculture is a good example, security and law enforcement, but again, also provides a number of new vulnerabilities for attackers to compromise. For example, drones could be simply knocked out of the sky and hijacked remotely. Information collected by drones can be stolen and manipulated. There'll be close calls and disruption to the air travel industry too, with many close calls being reported at airports, particularly in the UK. Just a few years back, 2019 and 2020, people may remember incidents at both Heathrow and Gatwick airports.
Right, right.
Piggybacking off the development of drones is investment in more progressive and futuristic modes of transport, so flying cars. For some, that may be a little bit out there, but probably not that far. Commercial and realistic use cases are still in their infancy, but attackers will certainly be excited about the prospect of this new emerging target too.
Of course.
And then finally, if that isn't enough for people, shipping vessels. You know, this is another area that we need to be concerned about. Shipping vessels would also become a prime target, especially for terrorists and nation-state attackers. From commercial ships to navies, as the industry becomes more accepting of autonomous ships, IoT devices, and dependency on satellites, they'll begin to experience a range of attacks thought only applicable to leisure vehicles. And it's something that's becoming much, I think, more widely known and widely concerned about within the whole maritime space. However, you know, cargo-carrying ships can hold entire continent supply chain in one hand, as exemplified, again, not that long ago by the Suez Canal disaster in 2021. And this issue was caused by rough seas, but theoretically, ships could be disrupted significantly more by cyber attacks on applications and networks on board. From GPS navigation devices to power, the potential for damage is huge. So whilst the coming years are likely, I think, to introduce a number of benefits for travel and transportation, you know, we always need to just offer up a word of caution. Historically, attackers will target any mode of transport they can with whatever means they have at their disposal. Whilst connectivity and autonomy is attractive for consumers, then we need to bear in mind it's equally attractive for those vying for disruption and chaos.
Right, right. You know, I need to shift my attitude because I'm constantly irritated. I can't get my Bluetooth to connect in my car. And now we're talking about much bigger problems. So I'll have an attitude adjustment after our conversation today.
This... Go without it. That's the thing to do.
Well, I have given up. This might be a silly question, but, you know, I'm coming from a layperson's perspective. And over the years, we've gone from 2G to 3G to 4G. I just bought the most up-to-date, you know, splashy iPad this fall, and my phone company literally told me this weekend that it will be obsolete within the year because it's not 5G compatible. And I thought, this is really, really expensive news. I've been caught off guard. But why is this shift to 5G catching so many people off guard? And why is it not being responded to adequately as a major threat that's going to compromise the safe operations of cars and shipping vessels and everything else?
Well, 5G is very different. I mean, it does differ significantly from its predecessors, from 2G, 3G, 4G that you mentioned there, in that it centers very much more on SDN, software-defined networking, network virtualization, and network functions virtualization. Virtualized network core and radio access networks allow network slicing for segregation and optimal resource allocation for different types of devices and services. So without getting into it, you know, too technically, it's an entirely different construct, and the architecture behind 5G is entirely different from the other ones that you've talked about. And that's all great because that increases the effectiveness of the way in which we can manage the network. And that's what is one of the things that goes into making sure that it can work so much more effectively and efficiently and, of course, quickly and handle bigger volumes of data. But on the downside, virtualized network segments are prone to software vulnerabilities that attackers can leverage to move beyond the virtualization layer into the physical layer. So despite many benefits, there are some real security risks associated with network slicing. Multiple virtual networks and radio access network partitions essentially create more entry points for malicious actors. An attacker can compromise a network slice to monopolize resources for computer-intensive activities such as crypto mining, for example. And such attacks are not only expensive, but they can also cause insufficient resources for critical services running on other virtual partitions. The increasing number of software components results in increasingly complex supply chains too. Security flaws in the suppliers' environments will have direct implications on the bottom lines of associated businesses. I think there's no getting away from that. You know, we talked a lot about supply chain security. We'll probably talk about it more again. And this is another twist on that overall supply chain security that perhaps we haven't covered as much. So probably is worth us looking at in a bit more detail based on this. And then further, of course, you know, many latency-sensitive 5G applications such as autonomous vehicles, video surveillance, Internet of Things, use multi-access edge computing. Instead of being consolidated in the cloud, the data is stored, processed, and analyzed at the network edge, closer to the endpoints. And while that enables real-time analytics and decision-making, it also expands the attack surface since critical data is distributed across an array of systems. Now, of course, the same sort of lightning-fast speed that I've been talking about and low latency that enables real-time machine-to-machine communication can also allow attackers to enact extremely fast and powerful distributed denial-of-service attacks. Industrial IoT, such as crop sensors, medical robots, waste management sensors, smart water meters, can become a target to cause wide-scale disruptions and chaos. And when attackers target the availability or integrity of 5G-connected cyber-physical systems, such as robotic telesurgery systems or autonomous vehicles, threats can quite quickly escalate and become lethal. So the whole way in which 5G works, the whole way in which the network behaves, the different sort of opportunities that we have for sharing volumes, the speeds, and so on, those are all the reasons why your 4G iPad isn't compatible with a 5G network environment, I'm afraid.
Yeah, well, it's not good news, but really none of this conversation seems like that great of news. 5G sounds amazing, but also comes with a lot of threats. And clearly, governments and organizations alike are eager to roll out this 5G technology, so it's going to become the standard of broadband cellular networks within the next few years. I don't think there's any disputing that. But the sheer volume and velocity of 5G networks, combined with complex infrastructure, heavy reliance on software, all of that creates this perfect landscape for threat actors. So what's to be done to ensure some level of security?
Well, governments can dictate standards and regulations for secure 5G infrastructure. Individual organizations will also be held liable, I think, for potential data breaches. So this isn't something that can be, you know, offloaded onto somebody else. So there's an onus, a requirement for them to raise their security bars before threats become incidents. And it has to be said, some are already doing that. For instance, Huawei is already ensuring that their products satisfy the security requirements of the current 5G product security evaluation based on the Network Equipment Security Assurance Scheme, as well as the recently created 5G security knowledge base published by the GSMA, which includes the industry consensus threat map, mitigation strategies and measures for different roles and standards and best practices. Given these high stakes, has to be said that security, though, and you would expect me to say this, should be at the forefront of 5G rollout plans. Before organizations adopt 5G, their organizational processes must adapt accordingly. So here's a couple of things that companies can do to prepare in advance for this 5G revolution. First, I'd say they can conduct risk assessments to identify 5G usage and risk factors across the organization. They also need to update business continuity plans accordingly. I'd also recommend that they carefully review contractual agreements and establish service level agreements with 5G operators that they're using, as well as evaluating their vendor security standards and development processes across the supply chain. And finally, organizations do need to bring security controls closer to the edge where data is being stored and processed. And perhaps they should at least consider adopting a secure access service edge model. So a few things there that people can do to really, I think, ensure that 5G implementations are as secure as they might be. It's all about planning. It's all about risk assessment and the management of data in a network environment that is very, very different from one that we've seen before.
Well, I appreciate ending with so much practical advice for our listeners, and I know that the ISF will continue watching 5G rollout closely, so I'm sure this won't be our last 5G conversation. I just assume that as long as you and I keep talking, I'm protected in some way. So we'll have another conversation. Even if that's fantasy, it's one that I'm going to hold close to my heart. Thanks for your time today, Steve. We'll be back soon with another conversation. And in the meantime, take good care. Listeners, we hope you found this episode helpful. And I'll remind you to take a look at the show notes where you'll find resources related to what we've discussed today, including an article Steve wrote for Forbes on the risks 5G brings and ISF's Threat Horizon 2022 report, which focuses on the development of hybrid digital / physical threats. As I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, we're including links to our episodes from last month on the New World Order and the race for tech dominance. You can also find those and all of our previous episodes in our podcast feed and on ISF's website, securityforum.org. We'll be back next week in conversation with Mark Gibson. In the meantime, if there's a topic or question that you'd like us to cover in a future episode, we'd be happy to hear from you at securityforum.org. You can find us on LinkedIn by searching CEO Steve Durbin or Security Forum. The ISF podcast is produced by Talkbox Productions and Tavia Gilbert, with music by Alexander Filipiak. Senior producer Katie Flood. Mix and master by Brian Barney.